It's Monday, April 11th, and this is VOA's International Edition. Hello, I'm Jim Stevenson in Washington. Coming up, the road to the White House has passed through states kind to presidential challengers.
What we have here, even beyond this particular leak, is a global trend to simply not tolerate corruption.
What will the Panama Papers reveal beyond the first wave of revelations? Also ahead, the rise of smoking worldwide and the fall of a country music icon. It's all on today's International Edition. U.S. President Barack Obama says he's guaranteeing he won't intervene in the government's investigation of how the leading Democratic presidential candidate, Hillary Clinton, used a private server email account while she was his Secretary of State from 2009 to 2013. Mr. Obama told Fox News Sunday in an interview that was taped last week that Clinton did not jeopardize national security through the use of the private email server. The top U.S. law enforcement agency, the Federal Bureau of Investigation, has for months been looking into whether her use of the private email server compromised classified government documents, and that has left a cloud over her presidential campaign. Meanwhile, Democratic rival Bernie Sanders has picked up delegates from a win in Wyoming, while Republican Ted Cruz swept through Colorado. VOA Senate correspondent Michael Bowman joins us to discuss where the rivals now sit against the presidential frontrunners.
Jim, we seem to be on a delayed arrival in terms of knowing just who will be the nominees for president among the Democrats and the Republicans. Last week, Wisconsin was very good to the challengers. Ted Cruz among one on the Republican side, and Bernie Sanders won on the Democratic side. This has led to a lot of talk that on the Republican side, there could be a contested convention, that perhaps Donald Trump will not get to the magic 1,237 delegates he needs to win the nomination outright. And among Bernie Sanders supporters, it gives some slim glimmer of hope that perhaps he could defeat the Clinton juggernaut, although those who look at the delegate math really say that that is quite unlikely.
Many people say, well, it looks like at least Clinton should be the nominee among the Democrats and perhaps Donald Trump. But Ted Cruz is really trying to be a thorn in his side, if nothing more.
You know, Jim, there have been so many twists and turns in this campaign, and get ready for another one, because next week the race turns to New York, and that is the home state of Donald Trump. It's also the state that Hillary Clinton represented in the U.S. Senate for a term. She calls it her home state. These are states where, for instance, Ted Cruz, who had some not so nice things to say about New York just a couple of months ago, might have some trouble. And even though Bernie Sanders was born in New York, he represents the state of Vermont. So Hillary definitely looks to have a leg up there, and the polls bear that out.
And who knows what bombshell is going to come out, because all of these campaigns have been rather explosive in coming out with a statement or coming out with some accusation against their opponent, and who knows what they have lying in wait.
In campaigns like this, you tend to look at some of the moves that a campaign might make and what it signals. Donald Trump had a big shakeup of his campaign staff just a couple of days ago after the Wisconsin debacle. Many people think that with the new people that he brought on, who are sort of tried and tested operatives, that this is sort of a tacit acknowledgement that he may fall short of the delegates needed to win the nomination outright, and that this could be setting up a big fight on the floor of the Republican National Convention in July, and he's going to need some, you know, real hired guns at his side to help pull him through. There are signs that you look for on the Democratic side. Bernie Sanders really does need to overtake Hillary Clinton among the pledged delegates. If he were to do that, then the superdelegates, the vast majority of whom are already for Clinton, but at this point, Bernie Sanders is running out of time, and he's running out of states in which he can accomplish that. I'm not saying it's impossible, but it's a very difficult road for him.
Our own VOA Senate correspondent Michael Bowman joins us each and every Monday. Mike, thanks for stopping by.
Thank you, Jim. It's a great time to be a reporter.
Indeed it is. And the world of politics also, of course, is in social media, all over it. International Edition's G. Abby Lee joins me here in the studio to tell us what's trending online. Hello, G.
Hi, Jim. That's right. The U.S. politics is trending once again. Former First Lady Laura Bush hinted her support for former Secretary of State Hillary Clinton. And although it's very heartwarming to see women supporting each other, it's a bit strange given that we can safely assume she's a Republican. Bush is supporting a Democrat contender. What do you think about that?
Well, politics does make for strange bedfellows, they say.
It does. She was speaking at the Women in the World Summit and says she wants the next president to be somebody who's interested in women in Afghanistan. And Clinton, for her part, endorsed Bush's book on Afghan women. Now, a couple of media outlets have reported on this, and the Esquire magazine shared a link to its article on Facebook, and the caption reads, "At the very least, she seems to be in the hashtag Never Trump camp."
Well, you might say that takes bipartisan support to a whole new level.
That's true.
What are the what's the public saying about it?
Jim, judging by the comments to that post, Bush's support for Clinton may not be that helpful for Clinton, and let's read the top comment. "It's because deep down there is absolutely no difference between a Bush and a Clinton. They are all one and the same. They use labels like Democrat and Republican, but beneath the facade, they are exactly the same. Her supporting Hillary is nothing more than the establishment circling its wagons." More than 200 people liked that comment.
I see. So what else is trending?
Remember when we talked about Florida Governor Rick Scott getting yelled at by his constituent at a coffee shop?
Yes. What a video that was.
That was. He released an ad as a response to that criticism, and that's been trending on social media all weekend. The ad is shared on YouTube and titled, "Latte Liberal Gets an Earful." Now, the video starts with voiceover that says, "You may have seen this video of a terribly rude woman at a coffee shop cursing and screaming at Governor Rick Scott." And the video goes on to defend some of her criticisms.
Mm. Well, it was quite a jarring video to watch in and of itself. What's the general response been like to this?
More than 5,600 people shared that clip on Facebook, so there's very high interest, and that received nearly 9,000 replies on Facebook alone. One of the top comments got 8,000 likes, and it reads like this. "I am offended when a governor on Facebook goes on to discredit someone. You respect all people in this state, not just the ones you agree with. You are subject to protests and much more. If anything, this posting proves you are not representing all people. Very shameful." The rest of the top comments shared similar sentiments, so it's quite safe to say it's not received very favorably among his constituents. One song comes to my mind, "Let It Go, Let It Go" from Frozen. Jim?
Well, we'll see how long it lasts. Sometimes in politics, things stick around for a long time or just blow right by. We'll find out. Thanks for the wrap-up, G. She tweets for our program's main account. That would be at @VOA_IE. And you can follow her at G. Abby Lee. This is VOA.
VOA Special English. A way to learn American English and much more. Broadcasting a half hour of world news and features every day on radio. You can also find Special English on television and online at voaspecialenglish.com. For 50 years, helping people understand world events and the language and culture of America.
I'm Victor Beatty. Since 1942, the Voice of America has been a consistently reliable and authoritative source of news. Today, VOA remains committed to providing an accurate, objective, and comprehensive news product at the top of every hour, every day. We can be heard on your local affiliate or streamed on the web at voanews.com.
This is VOA's International Edition. Among developing stories we are following, and you may keep up to date with on International Edition and our website, voanews.com, global security, the refugee crisis, and political instability were focal points for Secretary of State John Kerry and other Group of Seven foreign ministers who have wrapped up their first day of talks in Japan. Their two-day meeting is underway in Hiroshima, a city devastated by a U.S. atomic bomb near the end of World War II, and Kerry is the first U.S. Secretary of State to visit that city. U.S. Secretary of Defense Ash Carter, meanwhile, is in India during a wave of increased cooperation with India's military. Carter is looking to improve defense technology and trade cooperation while increasing military-to-military cooperation through additional bilateral and trilateral coordinated operations. Also in India, about 100 people died and hundreds of others were injured in a massive fire that broke out at a temple in the southern Indian state of Kerala early Sunday, where thousands had gathered to witness a fireworks display being held as part of an annual religious festival. The tragedy took place at around 3 a.m. local time, just a few hours after the fireworks display started. Officials said a shed where a huge quantity of fireworks was stored went up in flames after a spark fell on it, and that set off a series of massive explosions and a blaze that spread quickly. A main political rival in Pakistan has demanded that Prime Minister Nawaz Sharif step down after documents leaked from a Panama-based law firm revealed his children own several offshore companies. The revelations have dominated debates in Pakistani political circles and the media, mostly critical of Sharif, who has denied any wrongdoing by himself or his sons. And last week, he announced the establishment of a judicial commission to determine the facts. But his main political rival, Imran Khan, in a televised speech on Sunday, rejected the commission as an attempt to cover up corruption of the Sharif family. Frida Gittes is a world affairs columnist and author and consultant. She tells VOA's Ira Melman what's next as reporters comb through the more than 11 million leaked documents of the so-called Panama Papers.
I think we're going to be hearing a lot more details from this consortium, and my understanding is that they're not going to upload all their documents onto the web so that we can all do our searches, which would really create all kinds of problems all over the world. But I think what we're going to see is a divergence. I think some countries are going to take this very seriously. Other countries are going to try to quiet it, to dismiss it, to treat it as a non-event. And we're going to see the world moving in two different directions. But on the whole, I think what we have here, even beyond this particular leak, is a global trend to simply not tolerate corruption. And I've actually been writing about this for a long time. I think many people around the world have had enough of this notion that somehow corruption is just something that we have to tolerate. And I think this leak is going to add fuel to that fire.
Well, this is nothing new. We have all heard rumors. We have heard reports as we were all growing up that this has not only happened in the past decade, but decades and decades. That's correct, right? This has been going on almost forever.
Exactly. And, you know, this is really confirmation. I don't think anybody's shocked at the information that we're hearing. But it does have an impact. You know, this confirmation does have an impact. I don't know if you remember when the WikiLeaks communications were released, there was one particular item that talked about a party in Tunisia where the son of the Tunisian dictator had ice cream flown in from France for his guests. And, you know, the people of Tunisia, they knew that these things happened, but it wasn't very long after that we had an uprising there, and people mentioned it, people talked about that. So these things really, really add fuel to these concerns, to this irritation, to this annoyance, and the sense that this has to stop.
Well, one might think that this revelation or these leaks from the Mossack Fonseca law firm in Panama is probably only, as you say, the tip of the iceberg. Do you expect this to continue and expand?
I think we're going to be hearing about this for a long, long time. I think we'll be hearing about this for years, in fact. And I think we will be hearing and feeling the repercussions for a very long time. We don't know where this came from. Somebody, it's an anonymous leaker, and there are all kinds of theories, all kinds of conspiracy theories about where this came from. But the fact of the matter is that in this digital age, when information can be transmitted so easily, can be made so compact, can be transmitted without ever having a face-to-face meeting, this is just one company, possibly one person. we could be hearing about other firms that do the same kind of work. And I think we are coming to an era where you just cannot keep secrets, and that's going to bring a lot of change. The end of secrets is a transformative event, a transformative process in the history of the world and in the wielding of power.
World Affairs columnist Frieda Gittes. You're listening to International Edition. This is VOA.
The news never stops, so keep current on your mobile device with VOA News. Just go to m.voanews.com/English for instant, up-to-the-minute news and entertainment. Check m.voanews.com/English on your handheld device for news as it happens. Stay connected with a fast-changing world with m.voanews.com/English.
Jazz America.
This is Russ Davis, and on my program Jazz America, I carry on the tradition begun decades ago by the great Willis Conover by exploring the wonders of a century of jazz history. I'll cover it all from Dixieland to swing to bebop to modal, free jazz, fusion, world jazz, contemporary, and beyond. Plus, you'll hear the words of the artists themselves as they tell their incredible stories. Join me for Jazz America, Saturdays and Sundays at 13 hours Universal Time, online at voanews.com and the Voice of America.
The number of adult cigarette smokers worldwide is increasing, despite the adoption of a global treaty on tobacco control. However, one of the framers of the treaty says reductions in smoking and related deaths are achievable. VOA's Jessica Berman has more.
An estimated 740 million adults worldwide use tobacco daily. Since 1980, there's been a 41% rise in the number of men who smoke regularly and a 7% increase among women. In 2005, the World Health Organization adopted the Framework on Tobacco Control, an international treaty calling on countries to take measures to discourage tobacco use. Some 180 countries are signatories, and where there's strong anti-smoking laws, evidence shows tobacco use goes down, according to Laurent Hubert, the executive director of Action on Smoking and Health. Hubert led non-governmental organizations in helping to put together the framework. France is an example of the impact of anti-tobacco measures. Hubert points to the country's adoption of a stiff tax on cigarettes. He says the tax slashed cigarette smoking nearly in half, but it went up again by 7% between 2014 and 2015, when the country failed to adjust the tax to keep pace with inflation.
But it's not, as some people sometimes ask, is this about banning or making the product illegal? And that's not what it's about. It's about regulating the product so we can avoid the large public health impact it has and decrease prevalence of smoking to very low levels.
Tobacco kills 6 million people a year, says Hubert, and 1 billion people are projected to die by the end of the century. The Tobacco Convention has set a goal of reducing cigarette smoking by 30% from 2010 levels by the year 2025. Other anti-smoking actions that have met with success include banning cigarette use in public places and graphic images printed on cigarette packs. Jessica Berman, VOA News, Washington.
Merle Haggard, one of the most recognizable voices in American country music, died last week. Over the course of his career, Haggard released more than 80 albums, and 38 of his songs topped the U.S. country music charts. Among the outpouring of tributes, VOA Top 20 Countdown host Ray McDonald stops by our studio to add his perspectives of this music icon.
Merle Haggard died on his 79th birthday at home in California, April 6th. His son said that he had foretold his death the week previously. Merle had been struggling with pneumonia. He'd recently canceled all of his concert dates for 2016. Merle was born in California. He grew up in Oklahoma. And he is one of these artists who really comes from a place of total honesty in his music because he lived his music. He lost his father at a very early age. He was in and out of jail for many years. He had a lot of run-ins with the law. And this affected his life, his outlook, and his songwriting. He dug ditches briefly before going into music after his release from one particular prison stint. His first number one single came in 1966. The song was called I'm a Lonesome Fugitive. 3 years later, he recorded what might be known today as his signature song, and that's Okie from Muskogee, which is seen as Middle America's protest against the protesters.
We don't let our hair grow long and shaggy like the hippies out in San Francisco do.
He was singing against the hippies, or the young people at the time who were protesting the Vietnam War and various other social issues. And over the years, Merle Haggard gave various answers as to whether or not that was a serious song. But he did say he knew what it was like to lose one's freedom, and that he felt a lot of these people were not really qualified to judge the country. And it proved to be a tremendous hit with the so-called silent majority at the time. But Merle Haggard was not a knee-jerk conservative. In 2003, he defended the Dixie Chicks after they were attacked, after they spoke out against President Bush in the Iraq War. He said it was a verbal lynching, what happened to them. So he was a very nuanced and complex person. Apart from his lyrical contributions, Merle Haggard also helped popularize what was known as the Bakersfield sound in the 1960s. Along with Buck Owens, Merle and his band The Strangers popularized a more stripped-down, twangy, kind of honky-tonk style of country music, as opposed to the Nashville product at the time, which tended to be a little more polished. As it is today, Merle Haggard was pretty well known for having a fairly jaundiced opinion of modern country music because he said it just wasn't honest. It didn't come from the heart. It didn't come from a place of honesty. And as you might imagine, the music world is pouring out tributes to Merle Haggard. During his life, he was honored with just about every honor you could get. He joined the Country Music Hall of Fame in 1994. He earned a Grammy Lifetime Achievement Award in 2006. And he was given a Kennedy Center honor in 2010. So, quite a loss, Merle Haggard.
Our own Ray McDonald, your top 20 countdown host. Also catch him on Twitter.
At Ray on the Hits.
Thanks so much, Ray.
You got it, Jim.
And we thank you for listening to International Edition. Enjoy the day.
Next, an editorial reflecting the views of the United States government.
For 3 years now, the North Korean regime has pursued parallel development of its economy and its nuclear program, refusing all diplomatic overtures to discuss denuclearization. The result has been a disaster for the country, said U.S. Assistant Secretary of State for East Asian and Pacific Affairs Daniel Russell. Kim Jong-un has nothing to show for all of his intransigence. He has made splashes in the ocean with missiles and detonated nuclear devices underground, but it has gotten him exactly nothing in terms of respect, security, economic support, or diplomatic recognition. The United States and the international community will continue to impede North Korea's UN-proscribed programs through pressure with recently implemented sanctions. The goal of sanctions, said Assistant Secretary Russell, is not to harm the North Korean people, although the North Korean regime has regrettably prioritized offensive weapons over their livelihood. The goal is to bring North Korea's leaders to the realization that there is no viable alternative to negotiations. Mindful of the plight of the North Korean people, the U.S. has mobilized the international community to highlight the North's human rights abuses through U.N. resolutions, the landmark Commission of Inquiry, and opening a U.N. High Commissioner for Human Rights field office in Seoul. Even as the U.S. and its allies pursue diplomacy, deterrence must be maintained. After this year's nuclear and missile tests, the U.S. and South Korea jointly decided to begin formal consultations on the potential deployment of a terminal high-altitude area defense missile system to South Korea. The way forward isn't hard to imagine, said Assistant Secretary Russell. It starts with North Korea freezing all its nuclear activities, like Iran did while it negotiated. And it starts with a credible declaration of the North's past activities and IAEA inspection of its nuclear sites as a first step. Meeting basic international obligations is not a lot to ask.
That was an editorial reflecting the views of the United States government.